Welcome to Backus Page House Museum. I'm so glad you stopped by to visit today. My name is Angela, and I'll be your guide as you experience rural life in the 1850s. I'll also be joined by some very special guests, both current and historical, who will assist me in telling you our stories. Before we begin, I'd like to point out the locations of convenience during your visit. Barrier-free washrooms are located in the wooden building near the parking lot, as well as in the building directly behind the red brick house. A brown garbage can is in the parking lot, as is a place to securely park bicycles. The entrance to the Spicer Trail, which takes you on a walk through Johnny Pierce Provincial Park, is north of the parking lot and marked by a brown sign. The trail itself is marked with blue or red signs. We hope any pictures you take and post to your social media accounts will mention us. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram using @BackusPageHouse and Facebook by searching Backus Page House Museum. Tag us on each of your pictures or comments so we can share and interact with you. This is also a good way to get more information on artifacts, so please tag and ask away. Staff and volunteers are available inside the office directly behind the red brick house to accept your admission fee, answer any questions, sell you cold beverages or a society membership, and give a guided tour if you prefer a live person. Our gift shop is located inside the museum. We accept cash, check, Visa, or MasterCard for any admission fees or purchases. As you leave the parking lot at the start of the walkway, there is a kiosk on your left with notices for upcoming events, volunteering, and becoming a museum member. Our tour today will follow the white map of the grounds posted inside the kiosk. It's always good to get a little background on the area and a who's who for this time period while walking around the grounds or sitting at one of our picnic tables. Colonel Talbot, could you give a brief description to our friends?
Let's travel back to the late 1700s to begin our story. After the neutral Indians had left this area, Colonel Alexander McKee, deputy agent of the British Indian Department, was authorized to negotiate the purchase of all the land along the north shore of Lake Erie, from Kettle Creek west to the Detroit River. This covered what we presently call the counties of Essex, Chatham-Kent, and the western part of Elgin, and part of Middlesex County. The sale was conducted on May the 19th, 1790, for £1,200, paid to the First Nations tribes in trade goods. Nothing of much note took place until I was given an initial 5,000-acre grant in the south part of Dunwich and Aldeburgh townships to place settlers on. I arrived, in the rain, at what would be Port Talbot on May the 22nd, 1803. I noted in my journal, Sunday, 22nd of May, 1803, took possession of Dunwich. During the War of 1812, Sir Isaac Brock would make me a colonel of the 1st Middlesex Militia.
Thank you, Colonel. Let's begin to the left of the walkway with the barn quilt and heritage barn. Barn quilts are usually 8 foot square or larger, painted replicas of actual fabric quilt blocks installed on barns, forming a trail that can be found at www.barnquilttrails.ca. Barn quilts tell a story, draw attention to unmarked historical places, make a trail, can create a themed route, and barn quilts lead visitors from one site to the next. This eye-catching folk art attracts visitors and helps our rural communities put themselves on the map. Our barn quilt, the Irish Star, symbolizes the ancestry of those who settled in the area nicknamed Little Ireland, since the first settlers were all born in Ireland. The star emphasizes the progress of the settlement made by the pioneers and their descendants, who became settlement stars in the context of establishing a successful community. The four-point design represents the four founding families of Story, Patterson, Pierce, and Backus. I think it best if Mary Story tells you about the four families.
I'd be happy to, Angela. It's Mary Story here. A settlers landed at Port Talbot on July 14, 1809. There were 13 family members in all, including myself, Mary Patterson Story, age 51, a widow, my adult son, Walter Story, and my two daughters, Sarah and Anne. I had left Ireland with my two brothers, Walter and Leslie, four sisters and four children in 1801. My husband, Andrew Story, had already died in Ireland. We settled near Baltimore, Maryland. There my brother Walter Patterson and one sister died of yellow fever. We then moved to southern Pennsylvania and then to near Erie, Pennsylvania. There my sister Frances married John Pierce and another of my sisters died. When we came to Upper Canada, I left behind one sister and my eldest son, Robert. There were records of letters I sent to my son Robert in the USA. My brother Leslie Patterson and his wife Lydia Backus Patterson, with their sons Joseph and Walter, aged 2 and 1, were among the settlers. Leslie's home was the Anglican meeting place until a church was built. It was also the first post office between 1837 and 1852. In 1821, Leslie was made magistrate and performed marriages and burials. He took the first census of Dunwich between March 1, 1816 to March 1, 1817. Sir Isaac Brock signed a commission for Leslie Patterson to be a captain of the Middlesex Militia in War of 1812, and he was a colonel during the rebellions of 1837. John Pierce and his wife, Frances Patterson Pierce, sister to myself and Leslie Patterson, with their children, William, age 4, Leslie, age 2, and infant Catherine, came with us too. The first school was held in the home of John Pierce in 1822. John bought land at Wallacetown in 1828 for his son William, who married Anne Moorhouse. Catherine and one other Pierce child also married into the Moorhouse family. More about them when you stop by the Honey House. A year later, Lydia Backus Patterson's brother, Stephen Backus, arrived and married my daughter, Anne Story, in 1811. They had 13 children and lived the hard, busy life of the pioneers. Their son, my grandson, Andrew Backus, inherited land from me, and that is where you are standing today. Our heritage English Bay Barn was located at St. Peter's Rectory for over 120 years. St. Peter's Anglican Church, Rectory, and Cemetery are located just west of the museum. The rectory is now privately owned, but the church still holds services each Sunday. The first barn was destroyed by fire one Sunday, just after service had begun, and the present one erected that same year, 1896. Around 1965, Alistair Littlejohn purchased the barn with plans to move it to his farm and use it as a sugar shack. Unfortunately, the gentleman who had the experience to move it died. The barn sat on the rectory property for the next 40 years. Once Triconnell Heritage Society and Backus Page House Museum were established, it was decided by the Littlejohn family that it be moved here, and this addition to the museum grounds arrived March 17, 2005. First religious services were held in the home of Colonel Thomas Talbot of Port Talbot. Missionaries often traveling through were the ones who baptized the children. I, Mary Story, donated 10 acres of my land for the establishment of a church and burial ground. In the fall of 1827, St. Peter's Anglican Church was built, erected by Colonel Leslie Patterson, Stephen Backus Sr., and Walter Story. In 1840, Bishop Strawn consecrated St. Peter's, and 2 years later, the parish received its first resident priest, Reverend J. Stewart. The first burial in the cemetery was that of Matthew Stewart in 1825.
Thank you, Mary, for the family connections of the first settlers and St. Peter's Anglican Church. Let's proceed across the walkway to the orchard and garden with a few notes about the town of Tyrconnell, located to the east of the museum. Between 1817 and 1856, the town of Tyrconnell had a grist mill, a sawmill, a warehouse, ashery, distillery, a tannery, shoe and boot factory, and the Methodist Church. By 1861, a pier company was formed called the Dunwich Pier Company. This pier was the means by which Tyrconnell became an important shipping port until the pier fell into decay and was closed in 1890. The coming of the railroad spelled doom to this port. Trade was diverted to the other ports such as Port Stanley and Port Burwell that were serviced by a railroad. All that remains are the concrete pylons of the old iron bridge. John D. Pierce set up the first cheese factory in the district in 1865, and Tyrconnell had two hotels, Globe Hotel and Tyrconnell House. The Tyrconnell Cemetery was opened in 1870 on land donated by Meredith Kahn, and in the same year a telegraph line was connected to the town of Tyrconnell. In the orchard garden this year, we're growing the Three Sisters crop, which consists of corn, beans, and squash. This type of gardening would have been learned when the settlers immigrated to the USA from First Nations or from more established pioneers. Their background was flax farming in Ireland, so they were no strangers to agricultural life. All the trees in the orchard are various types of apple trees. Our compost bin is located within this garden for our convenience. The Backus family and other farmers of the 1850s would have had a compost pile within walking distance of the kitchen door for food scraps and garden material. If they had any pigs, food scraps would have been fed to fatten up the pigs instead of being put in the compost bin. As we do today, the rich compost and livestock manure would have been mixed and spread on the gardens for fertilizer. Let's continue across the walkway to the honey house. The honey house was built between 1828 and 1831 on the William Pierce and Anne Morehouse farm near Wallacetown. This was the land mentioned earlier by Mary Story, purchased by John Pierce for his son William. William's son, John, donated some of this land for Wallacetown Fairgrounds. Bees were needed to supply honey, as the only food sweeteners in this time were honey or maple syrup. White sugar was very expensive and not easily available. In 1967, the honey house was willed to the Elgin County Pioneer Museum by Stuart Pierce, grandson of William and Anne, and moved to its St. Thomas location in January of 1968. 10 years later, on April 1st, vandals burned the honey house to the ground. In the early 1980s, students at Parkside Collegiate Institute, under the instruction of teacher Mr. Thomas and then Mr. Hatherall, built an exact replica of the honey house using old weathered boards. The blueprints for the build are held in the archives of the Backus Page House Museum collection. In June 1984, a bee social was held to welcome the replica honey house back to the Elgin County Pioneer Museum. In 1998, the Morehouse family, who arrived in Dunwich Township in 1824 from Ireland and then moved on to Zone Euphemia Township in Kent County, donated a sign that stood beside the honey house. In December 2006, the honey house moved to where you see it today at the Backus Page House Museum. Let's hear what Gladys Elliott had to say about the honey house in 1956.
Thanks, Angela. This is Gladys. The traveling carpenter who built this honey house must have been an artistic craftsman, as it is an architectural gem with Gothic pointed doorway and windows for the entrance of bees and carved fretwork beneath the eaves. Also, he laid his split shingles in a pattern on the roof, which were replaced only a few years ago. Fashioned of unpainted pine, it has stood the years well, and now is an integral part of the garden which it adorns. Rebecca Pierce Waite, a niece of Stuart Pierce, recalled that her mother told her that the bee house was built by the late Samuel Hawkridge of Yarmouth Center. She told the Times Journal this in 1968. While this building is known as a honey house, it was actually a bee house. Pioneers attracted bees to the bee house by dropping honey on hot stones around the building. In the early years, the homesteaders filled it with large empty boxes. Wild swarms of bees from the woods flew to the bee house and produced honey in the boxes placed inside. The honey was cut from the boxes with knives. In later years, a large building was built that held as many as 130 hives. This was also where the honey was extracted. At that time, the honey house was used as a tool shed. And finally, memories from Muriel A. Morehouse Niece, born 1915, who remembers as a child going to visit cousins Stuart, Eva, and Frances Pierce each summer in the 1920s in Wallacetown with her parents. When she first saw the honey house, she thought, oh my, a perfect dollhouse. I was made aware of the danger of going near, so only could stand and admire or watch all the action. It was of natural wood, no stain, wide boards, no wide cracks, a perfect structure on the outside. Size approximately 10 by 12, with a heavy cedar shingle roof. Delicate lattice trim going up both sides of the roof, ending or meeting in a turned pole, a hole appears on the front wall at the very peak. I never knew what the backside was like. Was it a door? Never once did I peek into the interior. There were little half moons carved out of wood placed halfway up the front of the building at intervals with a small opening. The bee was supposed to land on the half moons, stagger up to the opening, and enter the bee house. The bees could entertain me for hours. Arriving heavily laden with pollen, never once missing the landing field, up about 2 inches to the opening and inside the busy factory. I never once tried to see where they were exiting. They never seemed to push or bump one another, simply a continuous flow of movement. A busy, organized world.
Thank you, Gladys. Can't you just see all those bees making honey for the Bacchus family? Thinking of food, let's move along the walkway to our kitchen garden. Both this and the orchard garden are small examples of vegetable and herbs that would have been grown by Mary Jane Bacchus. For a large family, their gardens would have been much larger than ours. Andrew and Mary Jane Bacchus had 12 children, however only 6 lived to adulthood. In the kitchen garden, we're growing a variety of tomatoes, onions, carrots, and along the perimeter of the garden are a number of herbs. Mary Jane would have planted items here that required more care, regular watering and weeding, and were easily accessible to her kitchen when cooking. Chicken wire had been invented by the 1850s, so it's possible there may have been small fences to keep the rabbits out. Please continue up the accessible wooden ramp to the first door on your left in the carriage house. Stop inside to say hello to our staff or volunteers, pick up some brochures, a cold drink, and remember to pay admission for a walk through the inside of the house museum. Should you need them, the barrier-free washrooms are located in the second door on your left of the carriage house. Thank you for spending part of your day with us and letting us share the history of our grounds with you. Should you have any comments, suggestions, or compliments, please let one of our staff or volunteers know or send us a tweet at Bacchus Page House or email info@bacchuspagehouse.ca. And thank you to our guests today, Colonel Thomas Talbot, Mary Story, and Gladys Elliott, who are always excited to share their stories. We hope you will continue on with the museum's interior audio guide.